Hello, Alex. It's MCR, if you can hear us.
Alex, you there? Sound.
Hello, Alex. I'll pass you the gallery. I can hear you. I'll pass you the gallery.
And Edward are voting right now to sanctify gay marriage.
This is, yes, about it. This is, yes, about equality, but it's also about making our society stronger.
Marriage is the union between a man and a woman. It is Alice in Wonderland territory for any government of any political persuasion to seek to come along and try to rewrite the lexicon. It will not do.
Good evening. On a momentous night in British legal, cultural and political development, MPs are voting right now on legalising gay marriage. We're in the Commons, on the ground in constituencies, assessing the impacts amongst voters, and specifically amongst the gay community. We're live in...
Alex, stand by with the headlines. And for a rehearsal on XQ, Alex, OS 10.
It's been a long haul from Home Secretary Roy Jenkins' Act legalising homosexuality 45 years ago to gay liberation campaign in the 70s and 80s to today's equal rights to marriage, irrespective of sexuality. Also tonight, the other trial, Chris Hughes' ex-wife, Vicky Price. Her recorded bid to get him...
Alex, you're something of a distant friend.
And telling a newspaper she wanted to nail him.
Also on tonight's programme...
Should robots like me look like you?
Bionic man Rex talks, listens, sees, and artificial blood even courses through his veins. So where should robot end and human begin? We've invited him into the studio to put the crucial question.
So, David Cameron...
Alex, can you tap your mic for me, please?
Statement tonight, he said allowing gay people to marry would make us...
Yeah, could you scratch your microphone?
...on whether to allow same-sex marriage...
Can you scratch your mic, please? Sounds very distant.
...authority thanks to Labour and Liberal Democrat for. But more than 100 of Mr Cameron's own MPs could welter against it, prospect of a deep split Tory party political head to Gary Gibbons.
Yeah, it just sounds very distant. I'm not quite sure why.
This is, yes, about equality.
Oh, you sound a bit better now, actually. Yeah, that's fine. Only in 15.
Okay. A moment in British legal and social history. MPs are voting right now to sanctify gay marriage.
This is, yes, about equality, but it's also about making our society stronger.
Marriage is the union between a man and a woman. It is Alice in Wonderland territory for any government of any political persuasion.
OK, Alex, stand by.
Try to rewrite the lexicon. It will not do.
Good evening on a momentous night in British legal, cultural and political development. MPs are voting right now on legalising gay marriage. We're in the Commons, on the ground in constituencies, assessing the impact amongst voters, and most specifically, we are amongst the gay community.
Thank you, Alex, and cut.
It's been a long haul from Home Secretary Roy Jenkins' Act legalising homosexuality 45 years ago to gay liberation campaigns in the 70s and 80s to today's equal rights marriage, irrespective of sexuality. Also tonight, the other trial, Chris Hughes' ex-wife Vicky Price, her recorded bid to get him to admit his speeding subterfuge and telling a newspaper she wanted to nail him.
Also on tonight's programme...
Should robots like me look like you?
Bionic man Rex talks, listens, sees, and artificial blood even courses through his veins. So where should robot end and human begin? We've invited him into the studio to put the crucial question.
So David Cameron has made his feelings clear in a last-minute statement tonight. He said allowing gay people to marry would make our society stronger. MPs are voting now on whether to allow same-sex marriage in England and Wales. The bill is likely to pass with a large majority thanks to Labour and Liberal Democrat support. But more than 100 of Mr. Cameron's own MPs could well vote against it, raising the prospect of a deep split in the Conservative Party. Our political editor, Gary Gibbon, is in the Commons now. Gary.
Well, as you say, the eyes are really on the Conservative MPs in this vote, a very small number in Labour and Lib Dems voting against the line there. And the guess is that David Cameron is very much hoping that he can get over the halfway mark with his own MPs. Pretty interesting that he should be aiming so low, you might think, but it's that serious. The split is that vast, and the rebels are desperately hoping that they can get over that critical mark, 152 MPs. The signs at the moment are that the rebels won't quite get there, but they will have a very sizable show of support at the end of the vote that's happening right now. And David Cameron, who entered this entire process pushing gay marriage in the hope that, amongst other things, it would buff up his moderniser credentials, must be hoping that the voters see that and don't just see a divided party.
I think it's just the thing with having the partnership.
Sophie and Donna Marie enter into a civil partnership for the ceremony next week, but they see it as a second-best option. They hope the vote tonight means soon they'll be able to have what they see as the genuine article, marriage.
It's a thing of almost a civil partnership isn't good enough to be a marriage. And even we have this conversation with people and we say, we're getting married. And they have to go, no, wait, well, we're having a civil partnership. And even the way we say it, it's kind of like, that sounds a bit like, well, like the older version of Microsoft, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
Not as good.
I'm a man. An ordinary man on the street.
Inside the Commons, the efforts to stop the same-sex marriage bill were a bit more coordinated.
There are many major issues this country needs to deal with. This is an irrelevance, and it should not be pursued through the House. Who are we, this government or this country, to redefine the term marriage that has meant one man and one woman across cultures, across ages, across geographical boundaries?
Well, over 100 Tory MPs have said they'll oppose gay marriage. Not enough to defeat it this evening, but enough to make trouble as it goes through Parliament, and potentially enough to mean the Conservative Party in the Commons is split down the middle.
What, I ask, is the Conservative Party for? Indeed, we are alienating people who have voted for us for all their lives, leaving them with no one to vote for.
I have 5 children. If any of my children thought that I was actually going to oppose this bill, they'd think I was bonkers. People under 40, the vast majority of people under 40, I'm afraid, support this bill.
The Lord look kindly.
Yesterday, the new Archbishop of Canterbury repeated the Church of England's opposition to gay marriage. In the debate, opponents of same-sex marriage predicted the protections exempting the Church from conducting gay marriage ceremonies would be unpicked by legal challenges. Marriage, the bill's opponents said, was about procreating, not just a badge of love. David Cameron met the US Vice President Joe Biden. Number 10 believes Republicans lost the race for the White House last autumn in part because they were the wrong side of modern values. David Cameron was asked why he hadn't been speaking up for gay marriage in the run-up to the vote.
Some would say you've kept quiet over this for days. Why speak out now, an hour or so before the vote?
I've been very vocal in support of this. I said that I thought marriage is a great institution and it should be there for people who are gay as well as people who aren't. That's why I pioneered this change. I think it's important for our country, important for our society. Yes, it's about equality, but it's also about a stronger society.
We're not in the Stone Ages anymore. Things do need to change, and I think he's the guy to make it change. And hopefully he will. Yeah, I hope so.
Critics accuse David Cameron of selling out institutions to rebrand his party.
Isn't the truth of it that this is about low political calculation and detoxifying the Tory brand rather than anything to do with principle?
We are doing this very clearly as an important part of the way that we can make this country a fairer place to live.
We've decided that if it does get passed, when it gets passed on our next anniversary, we will up to a full marriage, yeah. And we'll get to maybe have another great dress.
The demonstrations may be low-key, but the passions are high. Opponents feel David Cameron is steamrolling through a massive change that he never put to the voters. But tonight, with Labour and Lib Dem support, it passes its first hurdle to becoming law.
We want equality! When do we want it?
Now!
Well, the challenge the rebels have set themselves is to try and get over, as I said, that 152 MP hurdle, more than half the Tory party when you put together the votes against and the abstentions. It'll be very difficult to get there, but they hope whatever they get, it'll send a signal to the House of Lords that they should try and put a spoke in this piece of legislation. We'll get the details on the votes a bit later.
Gary Gibbon, and we think that'll be about 17 minutes past seven. Kathy.
Thanks, John. Well, some Conservative MPs who voted against the gay marriage bill say they've been under intense pressure from their constituents and local party officials to oppose it. And there have been claims that Tory members are leaving the party in droves in protest at the policy. Well, our political correspondent Michael Crick has been to the Derbyshire Dales constituency of Transport Secretary Patrick McLaughlin, who, despite some local opposition, is voting for the bill.
If you were looking for a white wedding, then the heart of Derbyshire might have been the best place today, but maybe not for a gay one. Many Tories, by far the strongest party round these parts, hate the measure. Jonathan Grant Nicholas first joined the party in his teens, but last autumn defected to UKIP. So unhappy was he about gay marriage and the way his MP, Patrick McLaughlin, now supports it.
I think it's an absolute disaster. I've enjoyed my membership of the party as well as hopefully contributing to its cause. We have been party to helping with leafleting and canvassing and so on. And I don't think David Cameron understands at all that in 2015 there are a host of people who are not going to be there either to vote for him or to support him.
And they have a membership of 500 people.
Patrick McLaughlin's constituency chairman says he himself has no problem with the new law, only that it's done huge harm to the local association.
You always get people leaving political parties over various issues that they disagree on. But in all my time as an association officer, which is approaching 17 years, I've never known an issue so divisive.
McLaughlin's predecessor here, the journalist Matthew Paris, was never confident enough of local voters to come out fully as gay while an MP. He later signed his civil partnership at Bakewell Town Hall, where they still explain marriage in traditional terms. As it happens, Matthew Paris's partner is now a policy advisor to Patrick McLaughlin. And whereas 9 years ago Mr. McLaughlin was one of about three dozen Tory MPs to vote against civil partnerships, today he's in favour of gay marriage, though his advisor denies having had any influence on that switch. Do McLaughlin's constituents think he and Cameron have now got it right?
We live in 2013 and it's about time that people, have to respect other people's opinions on the matter.
I don't think much of it at all. I don't think it's normal, actually.
It's not normal?
Well, no.
But it will be.
Well, I don't think it should be.
Might as well be on a par with the rest of us, I think.
Well, we're not that impressed, actually. Are we, love?
Do you normally vote Conservative?
We do.
Will it make you less likely to vote Conservative that David Cameron's doing this?
I think he'll lose a lot of votes by it, certainly.
Yours?
That's our view.
I've got friends who are gay and who are in civil partnerships and think it's fine. It should be the same for everybody.
On the evidence of this trip, gay marriage looks set to cause David Cameron a lot more heartache with his activists than with voters. Michael Crick, Channel 4 News, Bakewell.
Now, while we're at that vote, let's move on to other matters. Chris Hume's former wife told the press about taking his speeding points in a bid for revenge after he left her for another woman. A court heard today, prosecutors read out an email from Vicky Price saying she wanted to nail him. The former cabinet minister admitted yesterday that he'd lied about the speeding penalty, dramatically ending his career. Ms. Price denies perverting the course of justice and claims she was coerced. Our Home Affairs correspondent Simon Israel has this report.
Today the focus was on Vicky Price, Chris Humes' ex-wife. Her defence, the court was told, was that she took his speeding points under duress. It's a special defence, one only available to wives, blaming their husbands for denying them the freedom to choose. This case is no longer about who was driving that car. Chris Humes' guilty plea yesterday has settled that score. What the prosecution is now trying to show is how his ex-wife was driven by revenge to try and destroy his career. And that shows her as a clever, manipulative and assertive woman, not someone who was unable to stand up to him.
These headlines emerged in 2011 after Miss Price went to the press. She agreed with the Sunday Times to secretly record phone conversations with her ex. The aim, the court was told, was to get him to admit to her taking the points. The recordings were played to the jury.
Swear to me now.
This is absolute nonsense. No, look, for heaven's sake, I absolutely deny you took my points.
You deny I took your points when you made me take them? Oh, what? Fine, I could... You deny?
So you decide... You decide...
I can't believe you, Chris.
You're going to stand up and deny the story.
I can't believe you deny I took your points.
In another call, as she sought a confession from Hume, she denied telling anybody about the point swap.
Why would I tell anyone about me taking your points? It's not in my interest. Are you a moron?
Well, all I suggest is it's not in anybody's interest that you should tell nonsense to the papers. And I think you should be very cautious about it.
Excuse me. What is nonsense? That they are out there and I might go and tell them nonsense. Can you explain to me what you mean by nonsense? You know full well I took your point.
In some of the conversations, she vented her anger as he repeatedly warned her not to talk to journalists.
I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you making me take your points and getting others to take your points.
I have no intention of going on with this nonsense. You said this time and again.
I'm sorry, what nonsense are you referring to? You got me.
Thank you.
To take your points.
The jury was told the setup didn't work. Mr. Hume didn't fall for it then. His downfall came yesterday. Miss Price's plan had worked in the end. Emails between Miss Price and the Sunday Times correspondent Isabel Oakeshott revealed the jury heard her desire for revenge. A promise of two front page stories would offer her the chance of
inflicting maximum and perhaps fatal damage on Chris if you're prepared to talk openly about the license points. Would need some reassurance that it would indeed bring CH down. I have no doubt as I definitely want to nail him, more than ever actually, and would love to do it soon.
I think you could make yourself out to be very much the honourable one, saying it's been on your conscience ever since, that you knew it was wrong but felt bullied into it.
The prosecution acknowledged that was Vicky Price in 2011. 8 years prior, she had, they said, willingly played ball and accepted the points. The 60-year-old economist denied...
Alex, coming to you imminently. Imminently, Alex.
60 seconds ago, Westminster, and a dramatic result in the vote on gay marriage. This was the Commons as they came to vote right now. Let's hear it.
Order!
Order!
The ayes to the right, 400. The noes to the left, 170.
So, Alex, it's overwhelmingly carried. 400 to 175. Overwhelmingly carried. We are coming to you very shortly.
The ayes to the right, 400. The noes to the left, 175. So the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
An overwhelming vote in favour of gay marriage. Let's go straight for a reaction to Alex Thompson.
Thank you, Alex. Good.
Two minutes on, Alex.
2 minutes left on you, Alex.
Okay. Ask the other guy if that's a sort of peculiar or unique.
Does he see this as a historic moment? What kind of a moment does he see it? All right, Alex, wind out. Wind up, Alex. That'll do. Wind up. Last answer, throwback.
Alex Thompson in Soho, and more from the Commons. There are a couple more critical votes, so hang on for those. Cathy.
Thanks, John. An elderly widow has died in hospital after she was left alone in her flat for 9 days without food, water, or medication. Her friend and legal guardian said Gloria Foster, who was 81, must have been in agony, and she's demanding to know why the authorities neglected her. Care First 24, the private agency which looked after Mrs. Foster, closed down after it was raided by immigration police. But Surrey County Council failed to provide Mrs. Foster with replacement care. Jane Dietz reports.
Gloria Foster was frail. She had no children. Her agency nurses did everything for her. But last month, Care First 24 was raided by immigration police. Staff were arrested. The border agency had warned Surrey County Council elderly people would need new arrangements for their care, but it seems Mrs. Foster was missed off the list. Her care just stopped.
The agency nurses used to go into Mrs. Foster 4 times a day. She depended on them for her meals and medication. After 9 days on her own, a district nurse just happened to visit and discovered Mrs. Foster with barely a pulse. Starved, dehydrated, and with bed sores. It seems she'd just been lying there, hoping someone would come.
Her friend and guardian said no one contacted her from the agency or council.
There was fruit in the dish in the lounge, and there were little packets of food in the fridge, which were there if she had got up, but she probably lost sight of what time of day it was and just expected somebody to come. Gloria's final stages must have been in agony and being lost and alone.
Gloria Foster's neighbours can't understand it either.
I just think it's bad that that the elderly are treated like that. I know it was a mistake, but for that amount of time, I think it is more than a mistake, really.
Surrey County Council has said it's very sad to hear of Mrs. Foster's death, and it's urgently investigating what happened.
Jane Deeth. Now, he's been billed as the great white hope for the British economy, swooping in to steer the Bank of England through the choppy waters ahead. Mark Carney, who will be in charge of regulating Britain's banks, has received universal praise for protecting Canada from the global financial meltdown. The former Goldman high flyer has been compared to the stylish lead character from the television series Mad Men. Well, groomed he may be, but does Mr. Carney's record in Canada deserve quite all the plaudits it's received? Our business correspondent, Siobhan Kennedy, has been finding out.
He's clean cut, dynamic, even dashing, a winning smile. More central casting than central banker. Mark Carney's about to become one of the most powerful money men in Britain. And everyone seems to agree he's the best man for the job.
He is quite simply the best, most experienced, and most qualified person in the world to be the next governor of the Bank of England.
It's what Mark Carney did here that's put him on the map. He became Canada's central bank governor in 2008, just as the global financial crisis took off. As market turmoil rolled all around, he's credited with keeping the Canadian economy on track and the country's banks out of trouble.
As he prepares to leave his top job in Canada, questions are being asked about his legacy and the health of the economy he'll leave behind. Canada is still growing and employment is strong, but there are nagging concerns that the economy is beginning to falter.
Chief among those concerns is the state of the property sector. It's in suburbs like the Glebe on Ottawa's south side that fear the growing of a housing bubble that some say is set to burst.
Six bedrooms, four bathrooms, 4,000 square feet. Listed 3 or 4 years ago for 1.1 million, and this year it's listed at 1.9. So roughly double in price, has had some renos done to it, but it's still largely the same old house.
The same old house, but twice the price. Across Canada, there's a housing boom stoked in part by a decision Mr. Carney made. After just a month in office, he slashed interest rates to record lows. It was a bold and controversial move that turned him into something of a national hero.
Knowing that we can have a governor of the Bank of Canada and introduce him with AC/DC songs.
The idea was to increase spending and shield Canada from the financial crisis. It worked.
When it costs so little to borrow.
But as Canadian TV networks now worry, his move to fuel the economy has also fueled huge borrowing on credit cards and on homes.
So to maintain their lifestyle, this new generation is using their homes as ATMs, borrowing against the value of them at record levels.
And they point to a staggering 800% growth in remortgaging over the past decade. It's something that's worrying Mr. Carney himself.
But what we're trying to do and what we've been doing for some months have been to warn Canadians, or to advise Canadians, if you will, that yes, as you say, interest rates eventually are going to rise. So as you're taking on longer term debt, keep that in mind.
He's talking, but are they listening? As Canada's consumers spend away, debt is the big danger. Credit counseling services are working flat out, and now even American firms are moving in to meet demand. In fact, debt levels in Canada have reached a critical point. The amount people have borrowed compared to their income stands at a staggering 166%. That's even higher than the US figure of 160% just before its housing bubble burst. So Canadians know they're skating on thin ice. But while there are signs household debt is coming down, one influential economist we spoke to said Mr. Carney was also to blame.
How does monetary policy work? You set lower interest rates to encourage people to spend, and people are responding. And then the governor runs around the other side of the table and says to people, you shouldn't be spending so much. But it's the monetary conditions that are setting the pattern for people to spend so much.
Now the glut of consumer debt is starting to cause problems for the banks. They were always much stronger than British and American rivals, but just last week, Moody's, the credit ratings agency, cut the ratings of Canada's six largest banks, citing concerns over consumer debt and Canada's housing bubble.
So what can we learn from Mark Carney's past about what he might do here as governor of the Bank of England? We know from his moves in Canada, he was prepared to take bold action early on to see the economy through the worst of the financial crisis, even if it has meant storing up some pain for later. The question now is, will he take similar radical action here in the UK?
He's already hinted he might. Certainly he's under pressure to shake things up, given the hype. But with the British economy flatlining at best, some say he has little room for manoeuvre.
Siobhan Kennedy reporting, and we're joined now from the House of Commons by the Tory MP, the man who led in many ways the rebels in the Tory party, David Burrows. David Burrows, what is a pretty resounding vote, 400 against 135 in the Mother of Parliaments? That's democracy, isn't it?
It is democracy, and it was resounding in favour of the principle of the bill, but there was a significant, perhaps even unprecedented, in terms of a government bill, for them to, the government not to be able to rely upon half of members of Parliament from their own benches, which shows the deep concern that there is in the party and also across parties. I think as we go through the passage of the bill, we'll see increasing numbers from other parties as well, recognising their and voting their opposition, particularly when it goes over to the Lords. I think they've got their beady eye on the fact that there are so many people, so many members of Parliament opposing.
Well, you say increasing numbers from other parties. It seemed about 20 Labour people voted against it. You've got some Ulster Unionists.
I think
you're scraping the barrel a bit, aren't you?
I mean, less Labour. Well, I mean, many have sat on their hands as well. They're waiting for third reading to see if there's any change in the way this bill redefines marriage and the protections for churches and others. If there's no extra amendments and changes, then there'll be many more, I would believe, that will be voting against at third reading. But we now
can you tell whether you got many ministers or indeed whips? Did you see any whips in your lobby?
Yeah, there was a bunch of whips, a bunch of senior ministers, cabinet ministers. So this was across all ranks of the party.
Who did you see from the cabinet?
Owen Paterson, mm-hmm. David Jones.
Tell me this, there's now a critical vote about the guillotine, which will be whipped. Do you think that ministers and whips are going to defy that?
I think there's a recognition that once we've got over this principal vote, then the business is of balancing the government, getting their business through, and ensuring this is scrutinised. So the numbers of votes, I think, would be less, and I don't think there'll be many ministers losing their careers on the basis of the programme.
What would you say to those who will say of the 139 of you who voted against this from the Conservative Party, that you're kind of out of step with real and dramatic changes in society in the last 30 years, which have given rights to gay people, to people of colour, to all sorts of people who really do deserve equality under the law?
It would be more than 139, let's not quibble on the figures, but the point is that this debate and this bill is about marriage. It's not about one's views about homosexuality. That's something which quite properly has been settled, and it's important that sadly what happens all too often is people who, like myself, who vote against the bill are easily criticised for being homophobic.
Let's stick to marriage. Let's look at that. I mean, didn't you find there was something hypocritical about MPs in that chamber, where there's a notorious life of people who had relationships with their secretaries, people who have had many marriages and the rest of it? I mean, what is the sanctity of marriage that is being broken by this? Marriage is a very difficult condition, and it's something which every human has the right to have an attempt at.
Well, at the very least, we should perhaps be spending more time and attention looking at the fragility of marriage up and down this country and doing more to support it. But we're not voting purely on our own view of our own experience of marriage. It's also not just an issue about couples getting into marriage, their access to marriage. It's about the whole social institution, whether you're gay, straight, married or not. We all have an interest in marriage, particularly defined between a man and a woman, the enduring value, relationship to children, and all the rest of it, which now we're seeking to redefine and unravel in a historic way.
David Burrows, thank you very, very much for coming out to talk to us. Well, now, over to someone I couldn't even hold a microphone to. Rex, who knows? One day, my successor?
It is all about me. I have got artificial limbs, synthetic blood, and a mechanical heart. Find out why experts spent $1 million to bring me to life.
Well now, perhaps you'll let me read a quick summary of tonight's news at 7:31. In the last few minutes, MPs have overwhelmingly backed the move to legalise gay marriage in England and Wales. Unconfirmed reports suggest just under 140 Tories voted against, more than were in support. A court has heard that Chris Hughes' ex-wife Vicky Price told the press she'd taken his speeding points in a bid for revenge over his affair. And a widow who has left alone for days without food or water after her social care was cut off has died in hospital. Well, let's go back to Gary at the House of Commons for the latest on tonight's vote. Gary.
Well, we're hearing all sorts of numbers flying around, but
long and short of it is that David Cameron would appear to have lost the majority of his own MPs on this vote on gay marriage. The numbers are a little bit murky at the moment, but I told you before that the threshold that the rebels wanted to get over, that David Cameron wanted to get over, was 152 MPs. And it's quite clear that when you put together those that voted against gay marriage, those that abstained on this vote, that's the side, the people who were voting against, that got over the 152 threshold. That was a threshold that David Cameron, in a way, sort of set himself. It was word coming out of Number 10 that this was the key thing they wanted to achieve, keep the other side below 152, and it looks right now as though they haven't done it. Kind of explains a bit about how David Cameron's been taking a bit of a back seat in the hours and days leading up to this vote, having launched the whole thing in the first place. I think there's a sense that, as he said to one MP who went round to see him in the last few days, he thought he might have bitten off a bit more than he could chew on this one.
Well, how significant is this? I mean, you know, we've got Europe, we've got many other very big issues which he's having to fight on. Will it weaken him on those fronts?
Well, a Prime Minister who can't, on a key vote, command the majority of his own MPs, is significantly weakened. And you mentioned Europe. There are many other issues where people come back at him. But on this one in particular, this will fire up his opponents to try and get as much as they can in terms of amendments, in terms of frustrating this bill as it goes through its parliamentary process. They will not relent. David Cameron, I think, in some ways, was trying to take a leaf out of the Tony Blair textbook that says if you want to catch the public's attention, prove that you're still a moderniser in the case of David Cameron, that your heart beats in the right place, then you pick a fight with your own party. Well, the important thing is to make sure you can win the fight.
Gary Gibbon at Westminster. Well, it's all a very far cry from the repressed, buttoned-up Britain of the 1950s when gay sex itself was still a crime. Parliament voted to legalise it finally in 1967, but that didn't mean gay and lesbian couples were seen as equal under the law. Katie Rousel has been looking at the long campaign to change British attitudes on sexuality and how different things really are today.
Today, Parliament was voting to legalise same-sex marriage, but turn the clock back 50 years and Britain was a very different place. In the 50s, with more than 1,000 British men in prison for homosexuality, the Wolvenden Report recommended decriminalisation.
Homosexual behaviour between adult consenting males in private should no longer be a criminal offence.
Back then, interviewers asked questions that sound outrageous now.
If that suggestion is accepted and the law is changed, isn't there a danger that it may have repercussions on children, that these men may also go after children?
Well, from the evidence we've had, oddly enough, the opposite is what we should expect.
10 years later, with Roy Jenkins as Labour's Home Secretary, the law changed. A free vote this time too, but the battle for equality was far from won.
What sinister shadow from the past now falls between husband and wife?
The Victim was a cultural milestone. The first English language film to use the term homosexual, and that only after 30 minutes. The story sees Dirk Bogart blackmailed for his gay past and was banned initially in America. A decade later, and as groundbreaking culturally, John Hurt's portrayal of Quentin Crisp won him a BAFTA.
Have you ever felt love? Honestly, I haven't.
Your son's not one of those, is he?
One of what?
Gay pride grew in stature. They marched in Hyde Park to celebrate 10 years, and more joined them to protest the threat of Clause 28 in the 80s. The government ban on local authorities promoting homosexuality. They fought for their rights, but at home on the box, lesbians barely featured, and the portrayal of gay men, certainly in comedy, was insulting.
I would have been here at 8:58, but I caught my handbag in the loop.
Not just John Inman, but Larry Grayson, too, had Britain laughing.
I woke up this morning, and I felt as limp as a vicar's anthem.
Dr. Carey supports discrimination against lesbian and gay people.
But in the real world, protests brought change. Peter Tatchell and campaigners demanded same-sex marriage decades ago, and since then, milestone after milestone has passed. An equal age of consent, discrimination at work outlawed, civil marriages introduced.
We have moved mountains. In that period, since the late 60s to now, every major legal discrimination, bar the ban on same-sex marriage, has been repealed.
for thousands and thousands of gay people, this will be a joyous occasion because it will mean that society finally does recognise our love as equal.
Tonight, they're celebrating a progressive moment in British history. But these campaigners know that in many parts of the world, the freedoms they have are still a very long way off.
Katie Razzle reporting. Now, you might have glimpsed him in the studio just now, the $1 million man, or rather a collection of artificial organs, synthetic blood and robotic limbs, all of which can be fitted onto or into the human body. Rex, as he's called, has been put together by an expert team for a forthcoming Channel 4 documentary, How to Build a Bionic Man, in an effort to show just how far prosthetic science has advanced. Our science editor, Tom Clark, explains more.
Not only can he speak...
I feel exposed.
...talk to Rex, and he can listen. He can see through a chip wired into his retina. Damage him, and he would bleed artificial blood that carries oxygen from his nano-engineered lungs pumped around his body by an electronic heart. Strictly speaking, he's not a robot. His parts aren't designed to work together, but each one either is or soon could be a part of a living human being. Most of us would agree that a human being is greater than the sum of its parts, but what this bionic man so clearly illustrates is just how many parts science can now create.
Ah, this is amazing.
Rex is the embodiment of a journey made by Swiss researcher Berthold Meyer to discover exactly what science can offer people like him who rely on bionic parts. Mr. Meyer was born without a left hand. In a documentary about his quest, Meyer discovers the latest bionic limbs, superior even to his own.
This is just awesome.
May I shake your hand? That is absolutely incredible. Despite a personal interest in limbs, Mr. Meyer is just as impressed by internal bionic organs under development.
One of my personal favourites is the artificial blood that runs through these tubing. But this is not real blood, this is nanoparticles. And I thought that was absolutely science fiction, so I felt that was very, very impressive. Also the fact that they are very close to an implantable artificial kidney that will actually be able to replace a failing kidney without the necessity of a kidney transplant. Now think of the great benefits some technology like that would bring.
Come with me if you want to live.
But along with the benefits come some important questions. Should bionic parts aspire to visions of the future and give us superhuman power?
Should we allow, for example, people to replace electively their healthy limbs with artificial ones that are more capable and powerful?
Yeah.
Should we allow that? If yes, what are the consequences? If no, why not? These questions should be asked now and not when the technology becomes available.
A fully bionic human is still a thing of science fiction, but any of these parts could be appearing in a body near you sooner than you think.
Tom Clark. Well, we're joined now by Berthold Meyer, who you saw in Tom's report, and, of course, Rex.
Hello, John.
Not just now, Rex. Let's keep you quiet for a moment. Let me talk now to Berthold Meyer. Berthold Meyer, you have yourself a prosthetic arm. And I'm wondering, it's interesting, it does look like a hand, and yet it's very clearly a mechanical hand. Could it look more human? Would it be helpful if it looked more human?
Well, it could look more human if you put a flesh-coloured plastic glove over it. And some people prefer to do that. I don't. It takes away functionality from the hand because it poses more resistance, makes it slower, and also it sends out this message that you're trying to cover something, that you're trying to hide something, and it always looks awkward.
So in a sense, you feel perfectly comfortable with an undressed Rex. Let's Rex, could you set your old heart beating, old boy? Go for it. Gosh, that's rather interesting.
It's very loud.
But that surely, in a sense, also has been the beauty of the Paralympics, that we could see the prosthetics in absolutely all their mechanical glory. Pistons, stanchions, whatever they were.
I agree that there can be some aesthetic elements to prostheses, especially if you do not try to make them look real, because you always fail if you try to do that. And I think one of the examples that we see here...
Rex, stop your heart, for goodness sake.
It's very noisy, I know. Yeah. The face, for example. We put on the face to also demonstrate what cosmesis can do today.
It's your face, which is somewhat eerie.
I find it very, very awkward. I had a very hard time...
I mean, one's company, three's a crowd. I mean, you're there too. But seriously, you're a psychologist, and you kind of study difference. Do you detect the difference between those who seek to look as human as possible and those who want simply functionality? And there must be a difference. There must be different kinds of people who want different kinds of things.
Absolutely. First of all, it's quite a bit of a cultural difference. Individuals who live more in Eastern cultures and also in Asia do prefer the cosmetic look, because there, disability is still more of a societal stigma. And the less it is a societal stigma, the more people become accepting of showcasing kind of that technology.
Right, but then you get this thing. It would be possible to make this, I believe, probably 10 times stronger than it is, or 10 times stronger than a human arm. So what are the moral and ethical parameters of how far you ought to go?
We don't have these parameters yet. That is the big problem. We might be able to come up with bionic technology that's more capable than a healthy human body soon. Who should get it? Should we allow this? These are open questions to which I don't have the answer, but I think it's important that we discuss these questions now before the technology becomes available.
That's fascinating. This guy, incidentally, has a pancreas, which is interesting.
It has. It has an artificial pancreas that can give off insulin into the artificial blood that flows through the tubing.
With tremendous potential for diabetics.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of potential for overcoming many diseases through technology, not only for diabetics, but also for individuals with a failing kidney, for example, also for individuals with a failing heart.
Well, alas, that's where we're going to have to end it. But Bertel, well, Rex, indeed, thank you very, very much for coming in.
I'm surprised Rex doesn't want to read these headlines. But anyway, after the break, the latest on the vote to legalize gay marriage. And she says she's achieved everything she always wanted. The Olympic swimming champion Rebecca Adlington talked to me about retirement at 23, body image, and life beyond the pool. Now, we're constantly being told we'll all have to work until we drop, so it might be hard not to feel just a little bit envious of Olympic swimming champion Becky Adlington, because she's hanging up her goggles at the age of just 23. The swimmer who won 2 gold medals at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, with a double bronze at last summer's London Games, but despite being the most successful Olympic swimmer of her generation, she was mercilessly harassed on social media sites like Twitter about her appearance. And she's now begun a campaign to teach every child in the country to learn to swim before they leave primary school. Well, earlier I met Becky Adlington and asked her why 23 was the right retirement age.
And it's just the nature of the sport. Everyone thinks swimming isn't necessarily a young sport, but it is. And it's similar to gymnastics in that way. It's very, very young. We saw just in the summer at the Olympics, not just in my event, Age of Free, but in loads of different women's events, there were 15, 16-year-olds winning, and it was just, it's just the nature of how it's going. It is a very, very young sport, and I can't really compare when a girl's 15 to when I'm 23. Your body changes. I've been doing the work for over 10 years. It takes a toll on your body, and my body definitely needs more rest and recovery now.
you and I both know that if you're a woman and, you know, you're in the public eye, you get a lot of insults, very personal, very hard abuse, really. How hard have you found that over the years?
It's been something that's taken a long time to get used to. I just didn't understand it. I still don't understand it, and will never understand it, because I would never, ever send a nasty insult to somebody. But that's me, personally. I'm not that character. I'm not that type of person. I wouldn't do it to somebody who I know or who I have dislike for, let alone somebody that I've never even met or know nothing about. I'd never do it, and it's just part and parcel of it. And I think it is being a woman. Unfortunately, that is the sad thing. You are going to get judged. And at first, I didn't understand it, because I was like, hold on, I swim. I'm not a model. I'm not trying to be anything else. I just swim. And people weren't judging me on my swimming. They were judging me on the way I look. And it is something that is just totally bizarre. I was kind of like, why? I just get in the pool. What does it matter what I look like when I'm diving in?
Has it in any way informed your decision today?
No, not at all. It had played no part in it at all. It's, at the end of the day, I've always been the most confident person in water, because I know that I've worked hard and done well, and that's where I've gained all my confidence from. I'm very, very different in normal life. I'm a lot more insecure as a person outside of water when it comes to not being swimming, but that never has played a part when I've walked around poolside. I know that I'm confident because I've done the hard work. I've put all the time and effort in.
Who's the Becky Adlington of the future?
Anyone. I think hopefully I've proved that anyone can achieve their dreams if you put your mind to it. I'm just a girl from Mansfield. No one thought I would do it, and yet I've done it. So hopefully anyone can be the next me if they love it enough and work hard enough.
The present me, but no longer alas swimming for Britain. That was Rebecca Adlington. The Irish Prime Minister has apologised to thousands of women who were locked up in workhouses known as Magdalene Laundries, run by Catholic nuns between 1922 and 1996. An official inquiry has revealed that more than 2,000 of them were sent there by the Irish authorities. Enda Kenny said the stigma endured by the women should have been removed long ago, but many survivors are demanding a much fuller apology and compensation.
The Barclays chief executive has promised to shred the legacy of the former boss, Bob Diamond, who resigned last year over the LIBOR interest rate fixing scandal. Today, the bank set aside another £1 billion to cover compensation payments to people who have missold payment protection insurance and for small companies who were persuaded to buy interest rate hedging products. Anthony Jenkins told MPs he will change the aggressive and self-serving culture of the past.
In other business news, the United States government is suing the ratings agency Standard & Poor's for $5 billion, claiming it knowingly inflated its ratings on risky mortgage investments that helped trigger the financial crisis in 2008. Here on the stock market, the index of 100 leading shares closed up by almost 36 points, a rise of 0.6%. Tonight's main news: MPs have voted to support plans to legalise gay marriage in England and Wales, backing the bill's second reading by an overwhelming majority. Despite David Cameron's last-minute appeal, initial reports suggest that up to 140 Tory MPs voted against the measure, more than voted in favour.
Well, let's go back now to Gary in the House of Commons. Gary, you've been poring over those numbers. What more can you tell us about the vote?
Well, it's as we said, that David Cameron has failed to command more than half of his own parliamentary party. One of the rebels came up to me a moment ago and said, he can't carry on like this. You just can't push business through Parliament when you can't command half of your own party. He said he's got to change the bill, and obviously the rebels have quite a few ideas about that, and he's got to change the way he does the job. And all the time, this is feeding into the perception that the Conservative Party is a divided party. The Labour lead opened up in a poll that was just out yesterday, and it seems that the driver in that is the sense that the Tories are divided. 71% say in that poll they look divided. 57% of Conservative supporters say the Conservative Party is divided in that poll. Well, they should know.
And the public doesn't like split parties, do they?
No, it doesn't. And they like the sense that a leader is in control of his party. That's something else we know. And right now, on the basis of today, he most certainly isn't.
Gary, thanks very much for that. John.
Move over, John. Technology is progress. He'll be back tomorrow night at 7 with Channel 4 News.
Hang on a minute, Rex. You may have a bionic what, prosthetics just about everywhere in your body, but you're not taking over yet. No machine's going to replace me. I'm going to tell you as it is. We're going to be back tomorrow, as usual, on the right camera. And until then, from Kathy and from me, yes, the robot got the camera right, I got the camera wrong. That is humanity. We are live, real people, and we're going to go on being real people for a long time to come. That's Channel 4 News from both of us. Good evening.
Weather does lots of different things, and so does the post office.
Good evening. It's been another cold day across the United Kingdom with sunshine and wintry showers. The concern tonight there will be ice as temperatures fall away. Weather warnings have been issued, and tomorrow, despite decent amounts